Hi, this is the AWS Podcast, and I'm Jeff Barr, coming to you from the AWS Loft in San Francisco. As part of the Intel Startup Spotlight, I'm talking to Seamus James of BetaBrand, and welcome.
Hey, thanks.
So tell me a bit about what BetaBrand does.
So BetaBrand is a crowdfunded clothing company. So people submit ideas. We have a process that the ideas go through a voting process, and then they're put in crowdfunding. If enough people purchase it, it goes into our line, we manufacture it, and the designers make money.
So. Okay. Do you do this on like a limited edition kind of a basis?
Nope. It's as many people as want to buy the product, usually we can make as many as they want.
So. Excellent. Yeah. How big of a production run would you typically do, or what's the range?
It depends on the product. I would say that most things are probably in the 500 unit kind of runs, and then there's some products that we have now that are well over 100,000 units. So it depends on the demand. Whatever people want.
Okay, so you come up with the designs locally, and then...
Some of it's local, some of it's international now. Recently we've done a lot of international traffic from Eastern Europe and from Sweden and all over. Like, we've been getting submissions from literally around the world.
Okay, cool. Now, I know that there's kind of a... Is there kind of cloud power behind this? Is this AWS powered at all, or...?
It is not AWS powered, but okay. The solution that we came up with for a particular problem was AWS powered. We are considering moving to AWS right now. It's a big decision for a company like of our size, and we're very much interested in it.
Okay, makes sense. So you and I initially met when you had posted on a Reddit thread about an awesome success story that you had. So yep. Why don't we kind of go through that, kind of where you were before and what happened, and then how you actually addressed the challenges.
We did a collaboration with a company called Valve. So they're the biggest gaming company in the world. They make games like Dota and Counter-Strike. We're doing Counter-Strike products for them right now. And they nuked us. They sent traffic to our site. They put us on a blog post that's in-game that everyone who boots up the game sees the blog post. And within seconds, they just melted our servers.
Okay.
So everything we run is bare metal servers. We run our own setup, and I mean they're hosted by someone else, but they're our own servers. And
you had no indication all this traffic was coming?
We knew it was going to come, but we could not predict or even fathom how much it was going to hit us. So
so orders of magnitude beyond expectations,
like quadruple the largest number we'd ever seen in BetaBrand history on concurrent users at one time. So we were not at all prepared for that level of traffic. We were thinking, double, something like that, and it just was way, way bigger, way, way bigger. So we're also a single page app now, so the number of requests coming in was a real burden for us. We had a lot of requests hitting all of our backends, and it just took us down in seconds. So that was a catastrophe. It's often the case that for a young startup that your biggest successes are your biggest failures. When you're not prepared.
I've used the phrase success disaster to describe that very scenario.
And it happens to everyone. It literally happens to everyone. I've been through quite a few startups now, and I see this happen every time where you see it coming and you're like, this is going to be great. And then it just nukes everything. Mm-hmm. And you're just like, you're sitting there just like your head in your hands, like sobbing over what's happening right now. And there's nothing you can do. There's literally nothing you can do. You're just stuck. You can't move any further. So we regrouped.
This was like way beyond the realm of like optimizing or tuning or anything like that.
We're in the process of optimizing and tuning, but the problem with load testing is that it's never accurate, right? Like, you do load tests and you have a good sense of what you're going to be able to handle, but I've never had a load test reflect what actually happens when you actually have users on the site.
Very true.
I think it's having IPs from all over the world and the delays between connections and different hardware and like different browsers and all that stuff hitting your site at one time. You have a million different SSL connections that are all going to be on different ciphers from different technology all around the world. That's going to affect your servers a lot differently than a load test will, right? So we regrouped. It was a Friday afternoon, and we were just bummed.
Best possible time for it to happen.
Yeah, of course, right? So we're just bummed, and we regrouped. And we remembered the solution that we had heard about a couple weeks earlier. I was talking to one of my coworkers about, if I was starting an e-commerce site right now, I would probably look to make a single page app with an MVC JavaScript framework, and then look for an API. And that way you can host it on something like S3, and you can just use the API endpoints from somebody else who manages all the servers. You don't have to worry about load at all. And it's infinitely scalable, essentially, right? Like, all you have to worry about is Amazon, who's extremely stable. Like, that's, once you're on S3, you're not going down.
So you already had this, you kind of had the concept in mind that there would be a really different way to deal with this.
I was like, if I was starting from scratch, this is the software approach I would take. And we're batting the idea around. We're not really like looking to move our entire site to it. That's like a big change, and there's no really solid platform for e-commerce like that right now. So we were kind of batting the idea around, and my buddy found JAWS, the AWS framework for Lambda, and it was like obvious that this is the solution for us right now. So we made a JAWS app in a weekend, and none of us had ever done anything with it before. You know, we have limited AWS experience. All of us have used AWS in the past. I have built stacks on AWS. My friend has servers on AWS right now. So we know how to use it, and JAWS was super easy to deploy. We came up with a quick solution. We wrote a function that basically the entire site mimics our live site. We took a kind of shorthand version of our production website and trimmed it down, put it on S3, and then we made a Lambda function that could receive email addresses and put them into our database for signups. And so basically we're just trying to get votes on these products to decide what we're going to make. Mm-hmm. And we could imitate the behavior of the website once someone signed up. We can just imitate that behavior of what they voted on after that and keep track of what products they're interested in. And then we made that in a weekend, and we put it up, and they put the blog post back up on Monday, and it was a huge hit. And we now have done over 1 million uniques in October so far, which is probably close to double our highest traffic ever.
Impressive.
And the beauty of it is that no matter how much traffic they threw at us, we were, doing, around 5,000 concurrent users at one point, right? And no matter how much traffic they threw at us, it could have been 50,000 concurrent users. It could have been 500,000 concurrent users. And AWS would have scaled instantly.
Now, did you need to request any upgrades in your Lambda concurrency or anything like that?
We have not had any problems with it at all, no. So because there's still the gateway of people having to sign up, So if we're doing, a couple hundred thousand users in a day, only a percentage of those are going to actually use the Lambda function. So the S3 part is just infinitely scalable. So once you have that, the Lambda function is going to, it'll scale. It'll scale as far as you need it to. You just have to call Amazon if you have to, but it's going
to
scale.
And we're always more than happy to raise those limits. You just have to let us know, and we'll bump it up for you.
I've never had a problem with AWS. They're super communicative. As soon as you put in a request, there's an answer right there. So I've had good experience.
So when you first posted this to Reddit, I think you said you'd spent 7 cents on Lambda so far?
Yeah, so we had spent a tiny amount of money. That was the thing. And then after 2 days or 3 days, we'd spent some money on bandwidth, but overall, it is a fraction of our monthly server cost. That's the beauty of it. It's like, not only does it scale way beyond what we already have, but it costs like practically nothing. It was amazing. Like, and we realized that there's some things we could have done with caching to save even more money. Like, honestly, this could have run us less than $100 for all of this. And it ended up being a little bit more than that. It was around $200 total, but it was nothing compared to our server costs every month. Oh man, a fraction. Like,
yeah, and it's dynamic, and it's totally related to your traffic.
Exactly. And the beauty of it, I keep telling people is that no matter how much you throw at it, you're only paying for the traffic you're doing. So as long as your conversion rates are staying consistent, you're scaling automatically without any overhead.
Yeah, so it's every product is effectively paying for itself.
Exactly. Everything covers itself. That's the beauty of it. So I really, I think that this is going to be a big thing in hosting. In development for engineers, I think that it behooves all of us in the industry right now to really look at these services like this and consider using them.
Now, as of that Friday before you got started, was there a lot of experience with Node and with JavaScript within the company?
So yeah, tons of JavaScript experience, right? So we're an Angular front-end app, so we have lots and lots of JavaScript experience. We've all written some Node. None of us are Node developers, I would say. But all of us have some experience writing Node before. And I really like the Python ability of Lambda. I think it's gonna be really interesting. Being able to run something like OpenCV on Python mm-hmm. with Lambda, that's amazing. Like, doing image processing on the fly is crazy. That's insane. And it scales with your usage. That's just really fantastic.
I've been really itching to, actually, I'm not like an awesome Python dev or an awesome Node dev. And in fact, the async model of Node still kind of twists my brain around a little bit. But Python at least is kind of procedural, and I can still follow through what's going and have done a tiny bit with it and looking forward to doing a lot
more. It's just so powerful. Like, there's all of the math functions and stuff you can do with it are really, really powerful. So any kind of big data stuff, being able to process on demand and not paying for something that's just sitting there not running, like, whenever you're paying for servers, you're literally paying for downtime. Like a huge chunk of your time, you're paying for downtime. So paying for something like where you're only using, paying for what you're using, is genius. It's genius.
So over this weekend, you kind of, you start on a Friday and you're like, okay, we think Lambda can help solve this problem. And so you kind of figured out Lambda, you figured out JAWS, you put the static page up, you actually wrote the function that takes the email address and throws it in the database, and you deployed it and did all the domain connections to make it all, and away you went. And
so there was, we have a team of four people that were working on this most of the time. One designer, two back-end guys, and then another guy that was working on our regular infrastructure to support any kind of incoming traffic that we had, you know, from just being on the web, you know, like from people seeing our name attached to this Valve product and then searching for us. So we did see like even a spike on our regular servers. But we literally had nothing on Friday. We deployed on Monday, and it worked like a charm. And now we've been kind of flipping back and forth between the S3 Lambda site and our regular site, just kind of watching the traffic go back and forth between the two of them, and then flipping the traffic as we can handle on the regular site.
Okay. Yeah. So do you think this will kind of be a fairly big change in the way you're thinking about building sites going forward?
So what we're talking about now is maybe using this as a boil over in general. So we can watch for any kind of traffic spike, and having this kind of permanent page that is similar to our regular site, that has some of the functionality of our regular site, but kind of keeps people off of our main servers. So anytime we have a press day, or we have something that's like, you know, we blow up. It happens every once in a while. We blow up, and then anytime that happens, we can have the site on the side that we don't have to worry about. Like, no matter how much we throw at it, it's going to run. Mm. That's really, really powerful.
So you have the Lambda function. It's writing to your database. Was that also in AWS, or was it actually writing back to your on-premises? Okay.
Yep, DynamoDB.
So everything was totally dynamic and totally scalable.
Completely scalable. That's the beauty of it. Like, we don't have to worry about our database server. We don't have to worry about anything. I mean, that is the power of Amazon that I really like, and that's why I'm kind of pushing for us to move to AWS right now, is that we can move and scale a lot faster with the services that you guys have than we can on our own. Yeah, we can build stacks. We've all done it. We can run servers. We know how to do it. But we don't have to. Like, that's the greatest part about it, is you guys can manage all of the parts that suck, and we can just build software.
I guess we'll take that as our duty.
Yeah, we can build the software that just makes cool products.
Yeah, and in fact, it's like we've called it, you know, the muck or the dirty work or the stuff behind the scenes. But yes, it is that. It's not super glamorous. It's just the things that have to be done, and we want to let the creative people take what we've got and then build on it from there and do awesomely cool things.
And we're having a good time with it. You know, I think that every year Amazon adds new services, and I think Lambda right now is probably the most important one that you guys have added in a while. I think that's really powerful.
Earlier today, I actually spent time, Austin Collins, who wrote JAWS, was actually sitting in that same seat less than 2 hours ago.
Nice.
And, you know, he's been super thrilled with all the attention, all the success he's seen so far, and doing his best just to do his own personal scaling to make sure he's able to handle the... He's got thousands and thousands of stars on the GitHub repo, and he said he gets contributions from many, many people, and he's got a core team, and so...
Yeah,
pretty cool to see something take off like this.
They're coming along right now. There's a lot of modules being written for JAWS, and using Lambda, of course, that... are going to be very interesting, like user authentication functions and things like that, where you can really start to use this for more than just simple things like collecting email addresses, where this can really maybe become a platform to build a website on.
Yep, definitely there's this module concept that they're introducing.
And they're doing a good job of it. It's coming along. I think that they're obviously very young, and I think that in the next 6 months we're going to see some really interesting stuff come out of the team.
Yeah, so basically the lean startup model basically does exactly what you advocate, right? Put up the static web page, enter your email address, hit the submit button, throw it into a database. And so it sounds like that might even make for a really cool sample. It just shows how to use Lambda and DynamoDB
it's super basic.
Make all that happen.
And it, I mean, this is like, but it's so essential to our business, right? Like, our email list is our business, right? That's our bread and butter. That's where we make our money. You know, when we tell people about new products that they're interested in, that they've already shown an interest in, they voted on these things, they care about them. You know, the Valve community cares about the things that we're making right now. This is some of the newest Counter-Strike merchandise, and they're hungry for it. They're waiting for it. And so they want to hear about it when we have the products up and they're ready to sell. So it's pretty cool that they participated like that, and that, you know, even though it's a simple function, even though it's something simple, like, we can scale with them as they need. So
yeah, and simple is what succeeds.
Exactly, yeah. It's really great.
Now, with all that data you're able to collect, you do analytics and machine learning and cool stuff like that? on it?
I wish that I could say we did more machine learning than we do. We are a young team, and we don't have a data scientist dedicated to it right now. We're actually looking to hire a data scientist right now. We've interviewed a couple people. We are pretty close. We're getting to the point where it's going to be important. So right now, it hasn't been as important or focused on as much as it should have, maybe. And I think in the next year, we're going to focus a lot more on data. That'll be important. But the pipelines are great. Like something like Lambda is great for pipelines, where you can pump stuff at it as needed and just use it when you're ready for it.
I've been really kind of like blown away by some of the stuff that people are building on Lambda. They, not just the cool applications like you described to me, but they are actually doing effectively like big data pipelines that are, they're building Python and JavaScript functions and Java functions that are doing legitimate big data kind of MapReduce style processing.
Exactly, yeah.
With effectively no infrastructure. And you look at that and it's like, throw some files into a bucket or throw some rows into DynamoDB and it just, the functions kick off and away they go and throw it into the next stage, and it's kind of a neat, clean model.
Yeah, I mean, the other great thing about the Amazon DB structure is that even RDS is like very scalable. Like once you have all the data in a database on AWS, whatever service you want to use, if you want to use Hadoop, if you want to use whatever, all of it's available to you because it's already in there.
Yeah.
So it's so easy. There's no like moving data around. I find that a lot of times when you're dealing with big data, it's like just getting stuff from one place to another is really difficult.
Like, it can be. Like at first you just think in terms of like copying files, but then you start dealing with gigabyte sized files and you run the commands like, wow, that's going to actually take hours before it's finished. And this seemingly simple, trivial thing is actually like a big deal just to move some bits from place to place.
And I mean, if you have a database server somewhere that has all this data on it, but you want to get it into something else that can process it, you could be talking about 24 hours of transfer time. And what are you doing with that then? Like, you're building models that are taking days to process. You don't have to do that.
Yeah, this is why we introduce things like Direct Connect, where we have like dedicated connections to customer data centers. And at reInvent, we launched this thing called Snowball, where we actually will ship this thing that'll actually like store 50 terabytes of data. And it's just this cool enclosure-sized thing, and you order one online, and we ship it to you, and you pump 50 terabytes of data into it and send it back, and we'll copy it into S3.
And we started doing the math on like how long it would take to transfer 50 terabytes of data over like a fiber optic cable. Like, what's the fastest we could transfer it versus actually putting it on a disk and mailing it overnight to get it somewhere? And I think it still wins. I think the mail still wins.
It absolutely does. There's... there are real limits, and effect, especially if you're going long distances, and there's all these like latencies, and there's people that have actually built companies around simply getting more data in the TCP/IP pipeline at once in order to like maximize the throughput there. And it's just not as simple of a problem. Like everything, nothing's ever as simple as it would seem from the outside.
Yeah, I mean, you look at it, you're like, oh, I just want to move 50 terabytes of data from computer to computer. Easy, right? Like, connect a cable on each end, and then bam, it just transfers.
Yep.
No. It doesn't work that way.
Yeah, a million things pop up that were not obvious at all, in theory.
And then, that's, even with the best fiber optic connection, like, that's like, no one has that, so.
We've got many customers that are talking in terms of moving petabytes or tens of petabytes into AWS, and I know that when we launched a Snowball, they said, this is exactly what we've been waiting for to get this huge amount of data moved in.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's like such a simple solution that just works, and that's what you need. Like, you need just simple solutions that just work, and you don't have to overthink about figuring out how you're going to get this fiber optic connection to work, and figuring out how long it's going to take to transfer. No, you just mail it.
Yep, and like a lot of things, like, getting to simplicity actually takes a long time. Like, simple isn't the first step. Simple is the, after you've tried the five more complicated things and figured out why each one of those is actually, like,
I think
adding more complexity.
I think as engineers, we're frequently, like, keen on looking at the best technical solution, right? We look for the technical solution first. And sometimes the obvious solution of, like, plugging a disk in and mailing it overnight is not the one we think of first.
No, it's not high-tech enough.
And I think Lambda's kind of like that, too, where you're, it's not the way that most people would approach the problem right now. Like, people think, oh, we need some servers, we need some hosting, we got to handle things this way. But when you think about it, like, in terms of, we want only to process this much time, we want, we want these functions to run for, however many flops, whatever, and that's all we really need, Lambda is perfect, because it literally is what you're paying for, is what you use. It's amazing.
Yeah.
So
really just scrape away all the other stuff, and it's just like, take your code and hand it off to the cloud, and let us take care of all those interesting details.
Yep. And I mean, you guys are very good at it. It's what you do. And I would rather have your team of experts that you have vetted and found and worked with for years than try to hire someone on my team that their only job is to do this thing that we don't have to do. Like, we can outsource it to you guys, and you're great at it. Mm. So.
Really, really good to hear. Well, it's been awesome to talk to you. Glad that we... thanks for posting the story on Reddit, by the way. That was really, really cool. And it's great to see companies willing to share. And I know Austin really appreciated reading about that.
Yeah, you know, I want to, like, shout out to the guys who really made it possible for us to even do this.
Of course.
The Jaws guys are really great. My coworkers, Jared Rapp and Hugh Allery and Dave Ward, they all came through really big. So it was a good experience. We had a good time.
I think pushing forward like that in a weekend is always like, you can go back later and say, you know, we could have done a bunch more stuff, but that gigantic quantum leap forward, and then that's like, we'll fine tune the details later, is a great way to make progress.
Oh, it was huge. It was huge for us.
Awesome. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thanks.
This has been the AWS Podcast as part of the Intel Startup Spotlight, coming to you from the AWS Loft in San Francisco. This has been Jeff Barr. Thanks for listening.